Michael, I know you've produced the choice in five of the last six elections. This is a tough question, admittedly, but what stands out to you most this time?
Well, I've never, in all the years that I've been a journalist and a documentary filmmaker, which is exceeds 40 years now, I've never seen anything like the way the nation is in crisis now, the pandemic, the racial reckoning and disasters and polarized politics and all of it. It's just amazing. So we set out to do what I don't think people are going to get on other TV or web outlets, which is a kind of deep dive into the biography of the two candidates, starting back in childhood. And we weave them together after 8 or so minutes, and the chronologies roughly match for these two guys in their 70s. So it's kind of interesting to see where they were. But the new thing we're doing this time around, because of what's going on in the country, is really building our stories around moments of crisis for each of them. We're in a crisis as a country. What have they done at moments of real crisis? Anybody 70 plus has experienced crisis in their life, and especially these two guys. And we decided to go down in there and see if there were clues. Our films always try to pick up what we call the things they use in their life method. But this one, more than ever, because of the crisis, we decided to get down inside the crisis that faced these guys and see how they became who they are, what they carried with them from those moments, maybe as a way of predicting or a window into how they'll be as president.
And how difficult is it to produce a program like this when profiling a figure like President Trump, who some argue, breaks every rule of being a public figure, let alone the person, holding the highest office in the land?
It's, the great thing about covering Trump, I've made since he was elected, I made the choice last time between Hillary and Trump. By the very next morning, we had started work on films about Trump because it just seemed like such a seismic shift in the population. And in the voting public. And it seemed like he is such a star. I mean, never been a politician before. So it was, really a forest of very tall trees we could go in and harvest stories out of. And we made 14 hours during his administration about different things he did, including going to Russia and doing Putin and figuring out that relationship. He's a never-ending source of surprises. And in this one, where we decided to really go down into the crises of his life, we were in a way reverse engineering him. We've seen how he acts. He doesn't apologize. He doesn't like experts. He's all about diminishing institutions in Washington. He can't hold on to his staff. He's, what a lot of people say is, clinically narcissistic. All of that. Where did that come from? How real is it? Is it artifice? Is he just playing a role like he played on The Apprentice, or is this the real thing? And what does that mean? So for Trump, it's endlessly fascinating. And I think we spent a lot of time in The Apprentice time with him in that show. We spent a lot of time with the failure of the casinos, which in a way, he had plenty of warning they were going to go down. And in a way, they can be sort of, examples, a case study in how he decided to approach coronavirus. He dissed and didn't listen to the experts in Atlantic City who were telling him, you're never going to make it, man. You're going to collapse. And he just kept with this positive thinking. Well, where does that come from? And to see it manifest itself again in the denial of the coronavirus in the early days was really, really fascinating. So you can tell by my enthusiasm about it, I hope, Fred, that I was surprised at how compelling and interesting the Trump story continues to be, especially in this dimension around crisis and how he's learned to come back from them.
Yeah, very interesting. Vice President Joe Biden, by contrast, a longtime politician, some would say traditional in many ways and rarely controversial. What was the biggest challenge in telling that story for someone who's been in public life for so long? And we know a lot about him, and he doesn't create the kind of drama that President Trump does seemingly every day.
Well, you know, the thing about Biden is that he is, warts and all, a great. I didn't believe this when we started, and he had, you know, won the primary. I thought, well, how am I going to make Joe Biden, you know, interesting, especially equivalently interesting to Donald Trump? What is there about this story of this guy who, by all accounts, is sort of Joe average and lots of ways. People like him. He doesn't really stand for much that's obvious or controversial. He's made a lot of mistakes. So we went down inside, and my gosh, just the story of Biden stuttering could be an hour of a film. And I would have never expected that. I had no real sense of how important the humiliation that occurred around that with him. You think of the early 1950s in the United States and Joe Biden being humiliated, bullied, mocked. Little Joey had a very tough upbringing in that way.
And I think a lot of people I think a lot of people were touched during the Democratic convention hearing the story of how he came upon a young man who was struggling with the same issue of stuttering and spent time with him and how much that meant to him.
He carries this with him, but it's not just the stuttering. I mean, so the stuttering is one kind of thing. And then the death of the unbelievably tragic. Think of this moment. He's 29 years old. He's too young to actually hold the seat in the Senate, knocks off a super powerful, a super beloved Republican candidate. He has to wait for his 30th birthday to be sworn in. He's on top of the world of, you know, a wonderful wife, three wonderful little kids, and 30 years old, the United States Senator, and within a couple of weeks, his wife is dead tragically, and his little baby daughter and his two sons are massively injured. His entire life flashes before his eyes. So he's not only a guy from the stuttering, not only a guy who had no chance of winning, but wins. Then this huge tragedy happens. It's an amazing formative kind of period for Biden. And then the first time he runs for president, he gets caught up in this plagiarism scandal. He'd been falsifying some of his law school records, and he has to quit the race in kind of, again, humiliation. He apologizes, something you won't find Donald Trump having in his past record. He says, I'll get better, I'm going to persevere, as he did in stuttering and as he did after his wife's tragic death. And what happens to him? He walks right into Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas and all of the bad publicity. And his strongest support has always come from the black community. And they start to doubt him and what he's doing. And he comes back again around the race again when he decides to run in 2007, and he says what a lot of people viewed as racist remarks about Barack Obama, and drawing on the well of his black support and diminishing it. Obama saves his life, by the way, political life, and along the way gives him what they call the Obama halo, which forgives him of his sins in lots of ways to a lot of people in the black community, and the black vote in South Carolina gives him a victory that leads him to win the primaries. So for Biden, it's an up and down roller coaster of a life, where what he's become quite by accident is a kind of grief counselor to people all the way along, whether it's helping a young boy with his stuttering problem or talking to the families very personally of two New York police officers who were assassinated in the wake of the racial unrest in New York City after you know, after the Ferguson situation. So here he is, grief counselor-in-chief, determined fixer, and who's going to try to get everybody to get along versus a guy who views himself as the human wrecking ball, bashing away with his positive thinking. It's just a fabulous and the starkest choice I've ever seen for two presidential candidates.
Fascinating stuff. I wish we had more time, but thank you for speaking with us today, Michael Kirk. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, Fred. Thank you.